month, the conversation about activating this city's riverfront is heating up right along with the outside temperatures. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll tell you how a vibrant riverfront means a healthier Jacksonville. Give us a call now. It's 549-2937. Then later, cosplayers, listen up. A special con is coming to town this month, but this one is for fans on the autism spectrum. We'll tell you about the Calmer Con. First, though, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The state reports an increase overnight of 3,075 cases of coronavirus. The cumulative total in the state since the pandemic began now stands at 2.2 million. There were 39 deaths overnight as well, for a total death toll in Florida from the virus now at 35,307. Meanwhile, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is suspending all local COVID-19 emergency orders. On Monday, he signed a bill giving himself the power to override local orders during a health crisis. Now, the new law will not go into effect until July 1st. Pursuant to the bill, DeSantis says he would sign an executive order invalidating any remaining local emergency orders around COVID-19, such as mask mandates and the like. There's a lot to discuss about that, and we will continue to follow that story here at WJCT News. Our other top story this morning, for months now, there's been a community conversation going on about how best to activate Jacksonville's riverfront. You can take part in some public meetings about that very subject this month. We'll tell you how in a few minutes. But first off this morning, we're going to take a closer look at one aspect of this big citywide effort to build up the riverfront and how it can mean a healthier Jacksonville. We're pleased to welcome Gloria McNair. She's involved in community engagement at Groundwork Jacksonville. Gloria, good morning.
Good morning.
Also on the line, Anne Marie Knight, VP at UF Health Jacksonville. Anne Marie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
Already getting your calls, and let's hear from you, everybody out there. What do you think is the best way to activate the downtown Jacksonville riverfront? There are renderings, there are plans, there are proposals, and there are meetings coming up on this month. Give us a call. It's 549-2937 with your thoughts. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Okay. Let's begin with you, Anne Marie Knight. You know, we've been hearing a lot over the last several months about what we need to do on the riverfront. Of course, Shad Khan has plans. This group, Riverfront Parks Now, wants a big green space on the waterfront. And there is a public meeting coming up this month sponsored by the Jesse Paul DuPont Fund where people can attend and talk about this. We'll explain all of that in a moment. But we're having an interesting aspect to this discussion this morning because you are going to talk about how an active waterfront can improve public health. Now, this isn't something people might normally think about when they think about this project. But before we talk about how an active waterfront can make us all healthier, let's begin with the health challenges and health disparities in Jacksonville that you are well aware of. What are you seeing at U of Health Jax?
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. So all of those initiatives are great, and they all contribute to improved health. So when we think about the health challenges and health disparities of our city and many other cities, there's common threads. There's behavioral health issues, mental illness, and we'll talk a little bit more about those in a little bit, cancer, HIV. But what is at the stem of all of these diseases is the opportunity to reduce and to change our personal behaviors. So tobacco use, alcohol-related incidences, and then nutrition and physical activity. Those are critical elements to improving health in our community, to stem the challenges that we face. So that's the tie with this particular topic. But when you mention health disparities, that's almost a whole nother topic, but it all relates. When you think back in 2019, the Northeast Florida Healthy Start Coalition published their Project Impact Report, and they provided a plethora of data around infant mortality and the disparities in our community. For the layperson, maybe someone listening right now doesn't think that this matters and relates to the topic, but it absolutely does. Mm. If our young mothers and maybe older mothers are healthier in their own stature, maybe our infant mortality wouldn't be worse than the state and worse than national averages. And then there's a whole dynamic around African-American women, which is further aggravated at a 13.65 rate. So all of this matters. And I'll do one other little twist. Let's think about life expectancy for a quick moment. When we look across our area, in where UF Health sits today, the average life expectancy is 61 years of age. If we cross the bridge less than 5 miles away, it's 78 years of age in the San Marco area. In Arlington, it's 77. Mm. If anyone thinks that this doesn't relate to our behaviors and our access in our community, they're mistaken, and I'll share a little bit more later.
Then in this pandemic in particular, we've seen a lot of attention paid to inequalities related to access to green space, parks. How can improving the riverfront improve our public health in this city?
So it's an 80-20 rule we talk about in healthcare. So 20% of your well-being is supported through the healthcare systems in Jacksonville. 20%, that's it. 80% of it is outside the walls of the healthcare delivery system. So again, it's really your personal choices and habits around diet and exercise, smoking, and the like that will improve the health of our population. It's not owned by a system or a group of leaders and the like. It is really owned by us individually to make the changes. And these are all called social determinants of health. Now, there are some that need support from other structures, absolutely. Stability in income, education, we've talked about, I've heard you talk about affordable housing. But the built environment is what we're talking about today, which is really when you look around your neighborhood, do you have walkable sidewalks? Is it a safe environment for your children to play? And are there places for us as adults to play, to include our river? That's what really will help improve our health as a population, is if we think a bit more citywide rather than on an individual basis.
Let us know your thoughts about how we can best improve the Jacksonville riverfront. We'll tell you about some community meetings you can join in on this month. Let's go now to Gloria McNair with Groundwork Jacksonville. And of course, Groundwork Jacksonville is really involved in this. You're building the Emerald Trail, a green belt that's going to go all around the city that people can walk and bike. It's going to be really remarkable when it gets done. So when we talk about health equity in parks and green spaces, your wheelhouse, Gloria, is community engagement. How are you working to engage the public on all of this?
Well, for the riverfront activation, we have a number of activities planned to engage the community. And I must say something. I was speaking with our colleagues last week, and David from DVDL said he didn't care for the word engagement. And I put some thought into that, and I understand what he means. It's more, I went back to my public health roots, and it's really community involvement, getting all residents the opportunity to participate in this conversation about what we want, what would be best for our city at the riverfront, what activities, what do people like to do. So you've already mentioned that there's going to be the general public meeting, and that's going to be hosted by Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and DVDL. And I'm sure you're going to tell people where they can go, but if I'll say it briefly, the general public meeting is going to be on May 20th and from 5:30 to 7 p.m. You can register at www.dupontfund.org/waterfront. And I went there yesterday to see how easy it is, and I can assure you it's very easy. We just need your name, an email address, and your zip code, and it's easy to register. And you don't have to be in person. So for those of us who are still a little bit hesitant about going out in public, mm-hmm. Groundwork Jacksonville is hosting a series of riverfront activation water taxi tours along the North Bank. We had our first run through this past Saturday, and it was enjoyable. It was a 90-minute cruise. We started at Friendship Fountain, cruised down and to the shipyards, down to Met Park. We stopped, got out, and talked a little bit. And others can have this opportunity of our other dates to join us on one of these taxi tours will be May 8th, this Saturday, the 15th, the 22nd, and the 29th. And the tours will begin at 9 o'clock. And you can go to www.groundworkjacksonville.org and register for one of the tours. It's limited to 50 people, you know, for safety reasons. But we look forward to getting to know other residents. And like I said, this is the opportunity to share what you would like. We talk about health equity, and a simple way to understand that is when everyone has the opportunity to be as healthy as possible. And that need is different for different communities, and we will not understand that need if we don't talk to a variety of people.
Can you give us an overview, meanwhile, of the activation plan that the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund is developing in partnership with you guys at Groundwork Jacksonville and a firm called DVDL? You've brought them in to provide some expertise. What do you envision for the riverfront? What would you like to see? What's this plan going to look like?
The plan will be, is like I said, getting people out and involved and talking about this. The public meeting, the tours, but we will also have events out in the communities where, you know, not everyone's going to come out on a taxi tour, but if we have a community meeting in Eastside, or as it's sometimes referred now, out east, if we go to Springfield and San Marco, and all of these communities are on our list to have events there, Newtown, Durkeyville, Arlington, North Riverside, Brooklyn, and La Villa. We will stay tuned, because we will have a list of the dates when we will actually have meetings in these communities and just talk about what people want. And that's what we're envisioning, where folks have the opportunity to not more or less talk about what they want to see, but what they want to do, what activities they want to have, who do they want to be. And we're talking about an inclusive place where all people are welcome, and that's why we have this wide net that we're throwing out there to involve people. We also have some larger events planned. On May 23rd, we're going to have a sunset walk along the riverfront. And June 5th is Kicking It on the River, another activity that we're going to have, and look forward to seeing more flyers about it, look to social media, and probably from Melissa herself. She'll be sharing information about the dates and times and how people can participate. But we want people to know that they have a voice, and that's what the community involvement and community engagement is all about. When we get together and we make decisions together and talk about what we want, there's an ownership there. And where there's ownership, there's success. Because people want to see it succeed because it's for them.
Sure.
They want to see it succeed.
And let's go to some calls now as we talk about this month's Community Conversations. Giving your ideas, everybody, on how best to activate the Jacksonville Riverfront. Let us know your thoughts. It's 549-2937. Jim is in Riverside. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, so I'm listening to your callers, and as you probably know, we run a lot of the athletics that go on in the St. John's River. You know, we have an annual swim. We swim from Jacksonville University.
Is this Jim Alabiso?
It sure is.
Oh, you know, for people who don't know, Jim Alabiso is famous for swimming in the St. John's River. So go ahead, Jim.
Sure. Well, thank you, Melissa. So, you know, I'm listening to your guests, and I have to say, I'll try to keep this short. I agree 100% about the community engagement. It's so much about community involvement. And again, to your other guests about the health aspects of it, I mean, our group of folks over here that do athletics in the river and the oceans will attest to that every day about the health aspects of being on, in, or near the water. A really great book written about it by Wallace J. Nichols called The Blue Mind, What Happens to Your Brain When You're On, In, or Near the Water, for those interested in the health aspects. But, I like the riverboat tours, and I like a lot of the ideas that are coming forth, but I don't want us to overlook the economy we can build around athletics in the St. John's River. A couple of years ago, we did the Jacksonville's first river-based triathlon, where the swimming was done in the river. We booked 500-some-odd beds. We had a couple thousand people in the water, in kayaks, and swimming, and racing over three series events. And it's just a wonderful way to activate the river. And not only that, it's sustainable because it's a thing that, you know, an event management company or sports event management company can make a profit on. So it's something that we can just keep doing, that we don't have to, you know, feed with donations, et cetera.
Sure. Thanks so much, Jim. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. So thank you for that. Anne-Marie Knight, UF Health. That was interesting because Jim is a guy who's really made an impact getting people on the water and getting them to engage more with the river. But the unfortunate reality is it's not easy to access. It's not always easy. And the built environment really isn't set up very well for people to interact and access the St. John's River easily. We're getting lots of tweets about this. Here's a few. From our partners over at the Jackson Mag, they say a simple way to help activate the riverfront is to allow for more equitable and inclusive use of the space. This could include modifying systemically discriminatory policies that have eliminated activities such as fishing anywhere within the downtown area, he says. That's just one example, Anne-Marie, that you could point to where this idea of health equity and river access. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yes. I was nodding, smiling, and a little smirking as he was speaking because of those two words, access and equity, right? How are we as a community going to make sure everyone can play? And I mean that almost literally, right? So at UF Health, we've created what we're calling the Urban Health Alliance, four-pillared approach to the social determinants of health. And so it is important to us as we partner with Groundworks, Groundwork Jacks, to really be sure we are helping with the intentionality around access. The gentleman speaking is well-versed. He has a very targeted group of people who engage and enjoy that experience. But how can we make sure others in the community are aware of the opportunity? Until we do that, we won't be whole. As we develop the Urban Health Alliance, which will focus on policy, services, research, and education, we hope to really get more of our residents in the community aware of Jim and the like and promote the activities that happen in and around the community itself. We're not going to be able to move this needle if everyone doesn't understand the resources and the beauty of the things we have in our city.
Lots more tweets. Here are a few for you, Gloria McNair, from Stephanie. We need to think much bigger about downtown parks, as so many cities, large and small, have done across the U.S. A destination park system will transform Jacksonville and give us a true identity. She says, last week I co-hosted a young professionals event with River riverfront parks now. Young people want active urban green spaces, a riverfront that benefits everyone and creates a thriving downtown. That's what will attract young people and encourage them to stay in Jacksonville. And she says it would work perfectly with the Emerald Trail, a connected system that will bring people downtown 365 days a year and give people a reason to live downtown. Here's another tweet for you from Chip, a local artist, Chip Southworth. He says, a small public golf course on the water would be a huge draw. Of all of the courses in Duval and St. John's, less than three holes on the ocean or the river. And one more for you, Gloria. Can you talk a little bit, John emails, about the need to get more people of color in this discussion? All of the people on the first riverboat ride that you mentioned were white. Gloria.
Well, this is true about that first riverboat ride. I was the only person of color on that cruise. And the best way that I can think to get people of color involved is for them to show up at these events that we're discussing. And when we come to the community, when we have the community meetings, be there. Know that your voice matters, and that we're listening and we want to hear from you. This is not just rhetoric. This is very sincere. We want to hear what folks want. We can't look at health equity and what your needs are if we don't know them. Anne Marie already talked about the built environment and folks wanting to exercise and walk, but there being broken sidewalks. This is an opportunity to say what your needs are. How can we be more connected to the riverfront? The riverfront is connected to several neighborhoods there. We bring down some of those barriers that are currently in existence, and we need to hear that. We need to hear it from the people. So when you see a flyer that says that we're going to be out east and we want to talk to folks and we want to know what they want from the riverfront. Do they want a place where they can have family reunions and get-togethers, class reunions? Come out and tell us that. We want a place where you can walk, go and play dominoes with some of your buddies. Tell us that. When we go out to North Riverside, to Brooklyn, to La Villa, come out, folks, and tell us what you want at the riverfront, what you want to do. Who do you want to be out there with? You want it to be an inclusive place. Jacksonville has such a rich culture that even people who belong to the culture sometimes doesn't know about it. And I do want to mention that someone talked about the younger generation. Yes, they're very much a part of what we're going to be doing. There's even a meeting of the Next Gen group to talk about how we move forward, and that's today is by invitation only. I think I'm going to be in the background, you know, trying to blend in with the Next Gen. But we know that the future is so important for the next generation, our leaders. We want them to stay here. We want them to go to college, get those skills, or go to and develop a trade that remains here in the city.
Here in the city. And
if
I may, I just want to get one more call on. Lots of people waiting on hold. Tim in St. Augustine. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, I'd like to comment. There's a playground graveyard downtown on the North Bank and the South Bank. If you take a toddler downtown, there's nothing for them to do but run around this fountain. And it would be really helpful if there were a few swing sets here and there, slides or something, you know.
Sure.
For younger kids.
You know, there was a kids' campus, Tim, on the North Bank.
Yeah, but it got really worn out and never kept up.
That's right.
It really didn't have any physical stuff but running around again.
That's right. Okay, thank you for that. Anne Marie Knight, kids and families.
Yeah, they're key, right? If you can't address you can't simply address the health needs of one individual in the family without looking at the unit. So as we think about green parks and green space and having families together, walking together, cycling on the river, not cycling on the river, but being on the river, You know, that's all contributing to someone's mental, physical, and spiritual activities and their wellness. It is respite from the stressors in everyday life. So doing activities as a family, I agree with this gentleman wholeheartedly. It will only help our community and us individually even better. So the ability to exercise and improve our overall wellness is key. And as a healthcare administrator, you know what that's going to do for us. We're going to reduce the number of visits to the doctor and hospitalizations and all of that. It's all entwined together. And, you know, it's just key. It's just key that we have to realize that as a city, as Jacksonville, you know, up north they're shut in for most of the winter. We can go outside 365 days of the year. Our health and well-being should be far better than our colleagues up north if we're measuring only this one measure, right, as far as green and access to being outdoors. So we have to find a way to leverage it. You know, I was listening to Gloria and appreciate you, Melissa, and the team for allowing us to have this audience with you. But we do have to find unique ways to engage with our entire community.
Yes, and so let me end on that note and let folks know that these Riverfront Activation water taxi tours are happening. They are hosted by Groundwork Jacksonville, coming up on May 8th, May 15th, and then on May 20th at 5:30 p.m., a general public meeting hosted by the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and DVDL. Lend your voice to this community conversation. Go to dupontfund.org/waterfront. And thank you both, Gloria McNair, Groundwork Jax, and Marie Knight, UF Health Jax. Thanks to you both for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, a big donation from the players means women golfers are now teeing up again at Edward Waters College. That's later, but up next.
I have a son on the autism spectrum. He was really interested in going to these comic book conventions, but when we went, we found that it was too much for him to handle.
Maybe you have a young cosplayer on the spectrum. We'll tell you about this month's Calmer Con after this. Well, Comic Con is coming up this month on the First Coast, but this one has a special appeal. It's called Calmer Con, and it's for fans on the autism spectrum and also those who have sensory processing issues and anxieties. I spoke about it with the event's organizer, Adam Wilson, the director of the nonprofit Calm Passion. Take a listen. Hi, Adam. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Melissa. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks. And this is such a great event coming up, Calmer Con. So many kids and adults have sensory processing challenges, autism. They're on the autism spectrum. They have anxiety. So this will be a Comic Con experience, an authentic one, but with a little less sensory overload, right?
Correct. I started this nonprofit. My nonprofit's called Compassion. And I have a son on the autism spectrum, and he was really interested in going to these comic book conventions. If you don't know what that is, it's basically in a large auditorium space, and there's a lot of comic book vendors and people in cosplay dressed up as superheroes and Star Wars and princesses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we went, we found that it was too much for him to handle. He was having sensory overload and melting down. So that's when we decided that we would start our own comic book conventions that were more sensory appropriate.
So what will the experience be like as opposed to a regular con? What are some of the differences?
Well, so we can, you know, we have a limit of the number of people that can attend so that we don't have, you know, the crowd issues, the crowd noise issues. And also we separate all of our activities out into separate spaces. So we have individual rooms for things like Lego building and art, the area where the costume superheroes and Star Wars characters will be is separate. And we also have superhero and Jedi trainings. Well, those will be also in an auditorium space, you know, in a small theater space. And we break the, you know, we break people up into smaller groups to work through the trainings so that we can control the noise levels and also, you know, the crowding, the overcrowding issues.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about some of these sensory issues people on the spectrum have and others, too. This is a cause close to my heart. There are several members of my immediate and extended family, all males, on the autism spectrum. And so I'm very familiar with this. But can you explain a little bit, for people who aren't familiar, why this sensory overload can be such an issue?
Yes, yeah, certainly. So somebody that's neurotypical and has well-regulated senses, they can take a lot of input at once. You think about just walking down the street on a normal day. You might walk past a cafe and smell coffee, and a dog might bark at you, and you might have to wait at a crosswalk to cross the street, and a lot of these things going on at the same time, and, you know, you're able to process it. For a lot of people that aren't neurotypical, that are on the autism spectrum, that have other, you know, challenges, perhaps the smell of spaghetti sauce will make it so that all their other senses shut down. Or if people are standing too close to them, they might get overwhelmed, or there's too much noise, or a bright light flashes in their face. So it's really a matter of, you know, being able to mitigate their circumstances in the same way that, you know, somebody who isn't on the spectrum would be able to do.
Right. So events like these are so great. And your organization, Calm Passion, do you do other types of events besides, you know, a comic book and pop culture convention? What else are you working on?
Well, yeah, I mean, we do the convention itself, but we also go to several other events to, you know, help them out. I've worked with a lot of different autism organizations that were based up here in Massachusetts. And I've worked with a lot of organizations up here, helping them with like 5K fundraisers or, you know, things like that nature, fundraisers or events where they just want to have family fun days. We also go to other larger conventions like, you know, if you've seen what San Diego Comic-Con is or, you know, any of the larger conventions, I know there's several of them that happen like in the Orlando area as well down there. We'll set up rooms that are sensory spaces where people can come off of the main floor and they just have a quiet place. We have activities that they need to help themselves regulate. And if they need to stimulate, sometimes people on the spectrum will have to, you know, do that in order to get regulated again and get ready to go back and have some more fun. So we do a lot of those types of things as well.
So great. And it's exciting that this is coming to Jacksonville. Get your tickets now for the Southeast Calmer Con coming up May 16th, 9 a.m. at the Thrasher Horn Center in Orange Park, Sunday, May 16th. Tickets at thcenter.org. And Adam Wilson, director of Calm Passion, thanks for all you do to help this community. And it sounds like a lot of fun. Hope you enjoy it.
All right. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you today.
Well, women's golf is coming back to Edward Waters College, thanks to a donation from the Players. Right now, we're pleased to welcome EWC's athletic director, Dr. Paul Bryant. Good morning, Dr. Bryant.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks. And also on the line, Marcia Oliver. She's the PGA Tour's Director of Community Relations and Inclusion. Marcia, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Great to be with you this morning.
So good to have you both on the show. Okay, so a big donation from the Players Championship, $50,000 to help bring back the women's golf program at Edward Waters College. Marcia, let's start with you. This will bring a program back to life that had discontinued?
It had, yes. Under the leadership of Dr. Faison, EWC's newest president, he contacted us probably about a year ago to talk about some of the interests that they had. He had been at EWC in a previous capacity when they had a golf program. And he spoke yesterday, and even in his proposal and conversations with us, he talked about how tremendous and vibrant and just a wonderful resource to the students there at EWC. And he was disappointed when he returned to learn that the program was no longer active. So he reached out and asked us, certainly being PGA Tour's flagship event right here, just a few miles away, and had conversations about ways in which we could support and help them reach their mission and goal of returning women's golf back to the college. So we were delighted to have the opportunity.
This is great news for EWC, Dr. Bryant. I guess budget issues had caused the program to sunset some years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. What does this mean for your student athletes at EWC?
Well, this is a great deal. This is a big deal for our student athletes. This is giving them an opportunity to participate in the sport that they love, and of course, to do it at a high level. You know, at the collegiate level, we tend to have all our focus on other sports, but being in Florida, golf is one of the biggest sports here. And so we wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity to do what we love for them to do as well.
Now, this is part of EWC's strategic plan, Eminence 2025. You're reengineering your division of athletics to prioritize gender equity ratio in sports across all competitions. Tell us about that, Dr. Bryant.
Yeah, so I got here about almost two years ago, and one of the things we wanted to do, I looked at the strategic plan of the institution and then created a strategic plan for athletics. And in doing so, we wanted to make sure that, of course, we met the gender equity requirements. And seeing that, anytime you have a sport of football, you know, it kind of throws things off. But we wanted to see what sport that we could add that would assist us in achieving our goal. And then, like I stated before, women's golf was something that was right at the forefront. And having Dr. Faison and Ms. Oliver have a connection prior really assisted in that manner.
Now, this makes Edward Waters, Marcia, one of only two historically black colleges and universities in the state to offer a dedicated women's golf program. This is exciting, too, because golf is an expensive sport, and there are barriers to getting into golf for a lot of kids. So this levels the playing field in that sense, too.
You're exactly right. I mean, you took the words out of my mouth when you mentioned about EWC now being only the second HBCU to offer women's golf. And that was part of the compelling proposal that the EWC team put together. They'd done their research, I think, for them, and looking at a variety of sports programs, knowing that, you know, it had a program previously, what actually caused the program to shutter. They had been very involved in community relations as being one of the key parts of their men's program and women's golf program there, and going out to schools and mentoring and doing things of the like. So when we looked at, you know, how EWC would position themselves in the state with women's golf, it was very much an opportunity for us that we felt we had no choice but to support and accept. And golf is expensive. I mean, we have the first tee program, you know, that has been in existence for 23 years. Their entire mission is to introduce golf to youth, along with core values and of course, the elements of golf that plays. And they've reached, you know, over a million kids. They've got incredible numbers about how they have been successful in doing that outreach. But one of the things that they've identified, and even working with EWC as well as part of this initiative, is how can they improve that access to the most underserved? How can they ensure that the numbers of youth and participants that they have, and in those millions of students that they reach, are they reaching those that are in Title I schools, those where 70% free and reduced lunch? Are they in the most impoverished communities? So this effort, you know, combined with the elements that we seek to do and our outreach and our investment in initiatives that really are helping to advance equity and inclusion,
and removing those barriers and disparities, you know, I think will certainly help us grow the game, which is mm-hmm. which is one of our most important missions.
Yeah. And Dr. Bryant, there's a mentoring program as part of this, too. Can you tell us how that's going to work with the students?
Yes. So the mentoring program will encompass all of our student athletes that are in the women's golf program, along with our coach. And what we're going to do is partner with the First Tee to actually mentor some of the young ladies and young men that are in their program. And so if that entails some reading to them, to assist in some lessons, then we will do that. But we want to make sure that they see some collegiate students really doing what they love to do at the highest level. And so our student athletes will act as their mentors as they matriculate through their early childhood years.
Marcia, as well, let's talk about the PGA Works Collegiate Championship out at TPC Sawgrass. This featured top student athletes from HBCUs, Hispanic-serving institutions, other institutions across the country. So that sounds like it is another part of this whole initiative.
Yeah, Melissa. And in fact, I mean, we have 24 teams right here being, you know, afforded the opportunity to play at the Stadium Course and Dyes Valley Course. And EWC had been a participant in that competition. It's a collegiate competition that's hosted by PGA of America. We were fortunate this year to have the opportunity to host them in our own backyard and give them the chance to visit our global home. We did a career expo where we sought to introduce them to ambassadors and folks at the tour who are in various jobs to make them understand that, you know, there are careers beyond the sport that they play. And so it was just timely in looking at EWC with their graduation this week, knowing that that's going on, and Dr. Bryant and his team going out to meet the organizers and those who put that collegiate championship together. I mean, it was moving. I spent the day out there yesterday seeing, you know, students, I keep calling them kids, but seeing these young people with such, you know, hope and enthusiasm and talent, you know, stepping up, playing on a course that, you know, the world's best golfers have played on, and seeing how excited they are and the opportunities for them to say that they too can, you know, can chase their dreams and be a part of it. So we are thrilled that EWC will now have the opportunity to perhaps participate in that championship. So we're happy about what it can mean and what it can bring for the students there.
And the program gets underway next year, so congrats all around. Thank you, Dr. Paul Bryant, EWC's Athletic Director, and Marcia Oliver, PGA Tour. Thank you both. Great news. We're happy to share it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
And in a moment, a local publication spreading its wings across the Southeast. We'll talk to the publisher at Flamingo Magazine next.
CNS Healthcare is offering an agitation associated with Alzheimer's dementia research study. Has Alzheimer's changed your loved one? Have they shown verbal or physical symptoms of agitation? Learn more at 904-281-5757. The Cade Museum for Creativity and Invention, which works to inspire future inventors and entrepreneurs. With support from Visit Gainesville, Alachua County, the Cade is open Friday through Sunday and is a museum for all ages. CadeMuseum.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. President Biden's American Rescue Plan includes billions of dollars in COVID relief money for the nation's public schools. We'll check in with Talisa Dixon, superintendent of Columbus City Schools, one of the largest school districts in the country, about how the money will help her city. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the social life of trees. We talk with Suzanne Simard about her groundbreaking research that shows that in forests, trees communicate with each other in sophisticated ways, sharing nutrients, warning of danger, and helping their own offspring get off to a good start in life. Her new book is called Finding the Mother Tree. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
It's where the neon lights are bright and there's magic in the air. Now we're told New York is getting ready to put on a show.
I'd say you should expect Broadway full strength in September, but I'd love to see some of the smaller shows up in July and August.
I'm Jen White. We'll go behind the scenes on the effort to safely raise the curtain and bring Broadway back. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Flamingo Magazine, which launched right here in our area, is celebrating its five-year anniversary. And more good news, they're expanding onto newsstands across the Southeast. I spoke with Jamie Rich, the founder, publisher, and editor, to learn what's next.
Hi, Jamie. Good to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa, for having me. I'm excited.
So Flamingo Magazine, which started in Ponte Vedra, has gone not only statewide, but you are expanding across the Southeast. And as you celebrate your fifth anniversary, this is exciting news.
We are so excited. You can't believe it's been 5 years of telling Florida's greatest stories. And yeah, as you mentioned, now we're going to be available on newsstands across the Southeast, from Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee. We know that Floridians also live outside of Florida, and people who live in our neighboring states love us just as much. So we just want to, spread our wings and just keep telling great Florida stories. So we're super excited about that.
And this is your first print issue in a while since the pandemic began too, correct?
That's right. We, during 2020, like a lot of magazines and media outlets, we really had to rethink how we distributed our stories, and after our spring issue of 2020 hit newsstands just a week or so before the complete shutdown of every economy across the nation, but we just had to rethink that, and so we focused on digital, and there was really a silver lining for us because we grew our digital audience tremendously during 2020. And we had so much fun with that, and we loved it. We discovered so many opportunities through that. So we're excited about that part of our journey still, and we're going to continue telling our stories digitally on our website, through our social media, through our newsletter, our Fresh Squeeze newsletter. We missed the print issue, and our readers missed the print issue, and our advertisers missed the print issue. So as we got closer to our fifth year milestone, we said, we have to bring this the print edition back, and this one is actually going to be sort of bigger and better than our typical magazine, which we all already think is fabulous, of course, but it's going to be twice the number of pages. It's 200 pages of content. It's on, nicer, sort of shinier paper than we typically use, more celebratory paper, I should say. And, we take a look back at some of our most popular stories through the years that readers really loved. So some of these feature stories will be running in their original format, and they're from issues that are now sold out and that you can no longer buy even off of our website if you wanted them because they're sold out. But so it's a revisiting of some best of content, but also for some new, never before seen content. So travel stories and food and culture and music and all the things that our readers have grown to love about Flamingo, but combined with some of our old favorites. So there should be something in it for everyone, and we couldn't be more excited. We're calling it a collector's edition, really. So
Nice. And of course, Flamingo covers the entire state of Florida, which is a big, diverse place. But this issue will spotlight our corner of the state, the Jacksonville beaches and some local attractions around here.
That's right. So we have a special section in the magazine called Bird's Eye View, and it's an illustrated map, if you will, that really highlights different communities around the state that are sort of walkable neighborhoods, quaint neighborhoods that really sort of typify their area with local businesses. And we actually, believe it or not, had never run our own community in this section of the magazine. We'd done St. Augustine, we'd done Amelia Island, we had done some places nearby, but we were saving Jacksonville and the Ponte Vedra and the Jacksonville beaches, for this fifth year anniversary issue. So we're really excited about that, and just shouting out all of our favorite local businesses. So people who do decide to come to Jacksonville or Ponte Vedra for whatever reason, they will have our curated list of where to go, where to shop, where to hang out, where to have fun. So we're excited about that.
And what did it take to get this magazine distribution into all these other states?
Well, it's really just been, we have to work with distribution companies already to get the magazines on newsstands in places like Whole Foods and Fresh Market and Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and all the places where you would typically buy magazines. And for years I've been wanting to actually expand because I know people love Florida everywhere. But it was just really convincing that distribution company that, look, people want to read about the state of Florida in Atlanta or in Charlotte or in other cities that are a drive market to Jacksonville or to Florida in general. So it was really just kind of a sales pitch convincing mm-hmm. these guys that people wanted to read about Florida, and eventually they got the picture.
Well, congratulations, Jamie, and congratulations on 5 years of Flamingo, which launched here in our area and is now all over the Southeast. Pick up their fifth anniversary issue all across town, and maybe if you're out of state, you'll see it as well. Publisher Jamie
Absolutely.
Rich, thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it, and hopefully I'll be back on when we have our 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, and less challenging times. So thanks again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And that's our show. One more thought to all the Star Wars fans out there. May the 4th be with you today. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. If you missed our podcast, check it out later today wherever you listen, or download the WJCT app. Listen to all of our content right there. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.